Bevor wir in diese neue Folge von Birth Gossip eintauchen, möchte ich noch eine kleine Intro für euch aufnehmen, denn diese Folge ist eine ganz besondere Folge. Sie findet ausnahmsweise tatsächlich in Englisch statt, was ich ja bisher noch nie getan habe. Es ist eine Folge, die ich mit meiner guten und ältesten Freundin Claire aus Perth, Australien, wo ich ja normalerweise tatsächlich lebe, aufgenommen habe. Und wenn ich von ältester Freundin spreche, dann meine ich nicht, dass ich sie schon seit der Schule kenne oder wir zusammen im Sandkasten gespielt haben. Dem ist nämlich nicht der Fall. Wir haben uns tatsächlich in diesem Leben erst vor ein paar Jahren kennengelernt und trotzdem ist sie in diesem Leben meine älteste Freundin, meine älteste Begleiterin, die ich schon seit vielen Jahrtausenden kenne. Und diese Wiederbegegnung vor ein paar Jahren war so instinktiv und war so bewusst. In dem Moment war uns beiden klar, in dem Moment, wo wir uns nebeneinander gesetzt haben, okay, das ist nicht das erste Mal, dass wir nebeneinander sitzen. Und dieses uralte Wiedererkennen ist eine unglaubliche Bereicherung für mich. Und sie ist mir wie in den vergangenen Leben, auch in diesem Leben, meine bedeutendste Freundin, meine Freundin, die ich am allermeisten verehre und von der ich am allermeisten le lernen darf. Sie ist meine Lehrerin, Freundin und Lehrerin gleichzeitig. Und ich habe eine so unglaubliche Ehrfurcht, manchmal vielleicht sogar im wahrsten Sinne des Wortes auf ganz gesunde Weise vor ihr, dass die mich einfach immer wieder an mein nächstes Potenzial und zu meinem tiefsten inneren Ich führt. Und deswegen ist es mir eine besonders große Freude gewesen, diese Folge aufzunehmen. Und ich hoffe, es ist für einige von euch in Ordnung, dass sie eben auf Englisch ist. Sie erzählt von ihrer dritten Geburt bzw. der Geburt ihres dritten lebenden Kindes. Eine Alleingeburt tatsächlich im letzten Jahr, zu der im Nachhinein auch noch die Hebamme kam, die mich bei meiner zweiten Geburt begleitet hat. Und von dieser ganz besonderen Reise erzählt sie, natürlich auch ihrer freien Schwangerschaft erzählt sie. Und ja, wenn ihr auch mich irgendwie mal in einem Zustand tiefsten Ichs erleben wollt, dann hört euch diese Folge gerne an. Und ich wünsche euch ganz viel Freude dabei. Hausgeburt ist gefährlich, Alleingeburt ist verantwortungslos, geht nur, wenn du bestimmte Voraussetzungen erfüllst. Think again. In diesem Podcast erzählen Frauen von ihren Haus- und Alleingeburten. Sie sind der Beweis für das, was dein Körper schon längst weiß. Du kannst Geburt in allen Variationen und Formen. Herzlich willkommen zu Birth Gossip, deinem Podcast für selbstbestimmte Geburten am Rande des Systems. Von und mit Antonia Unger, Birthkeeperin, radikale Aufräumerin der Geburtskultur und Dienerin der Frau, nicht des Systems.
That I had this dream that I lifted her out of my stomach. And I looked at them and I just felt this immediate relief that they were a human being and not a
Mm-hmm.
praying mantis. And then I was like, oh my God, you're not ready. Like, you can go back in now. Because it was almost like I'd stretched the skin, like lifting
Yeah,
as
okay.
you would a cesarean. And because of her consciousness and her being like being so advanced, like she didn't have any preference around, she was like, well, I could be born this way, I could be born at 20 weeks, and you could put me in an incubator. Like she just, and it was a person that I'm connected with that had twins at that time, and I also believe they're from the same kind of lineage. And she had them at 23 weeks. And like, I just remember her saying, like, see, we could do that. We could do that too. And I wasn't until I sort of spoke to her and I was like, look, that family, that's their first lot of children. So they can be with them while they're having their care and growing their bodies outside of the body. I was like, you have brothers and sisters. And we already have this family like network that I wouldn't be able to be like, I would be stretched, literally, like I would be stretching you out to try and be with you and for you to have an experience of our family whilst being birthed that early. And so she was like, oh, okay, yeah, no worries.
I'll
I didn't
just
know if
yeah.
it was a boy or a girl, but they were just like, yeah, okay, sweet, no worries. So I was like, you can, that would be. Not that it's better or worse, but like that would be the difference if you want to choose that pathway. And because like her being's quite unattached and and so technical, she's like, yeah, you just if you you can just grow it in a lab.
I press record because I didn't really want to miss what you were saying about her, being a praying mantis, which was
Feel
great.
free to record it. Oh yeah.
But is that
Yeah.
okay? And also, do you feel ready to dive into your story?
Yeah, I do. I do actually. It's funny because I feel like probably 2 months ago I wasn't, but I feel like I am now because the story, I guess, is not still being like 100% written or scripted. Before I was, when you're in something and you're like, I can't actually make sense of this because I'm living it right now. Like it might mean something or it might mean nothing, but I have to do it before it means anything. Before I can't reflect on something that is still unfolding or in the process or still coming together. Yeah. So, yeah, it wasn't really until, yeah, I had that halfway mark. But I remember early on, Papa's just out there, darling. He's just here. I. Even Andrea asked me, and I think it was just because I was at the coalface with Penny and her death stuff for such a long time, and so much of the womb healing revealed to me like so many lifetimes where she had passed, and I had been so heartbroken that I had gone not long after her, or yeah, she had. Like I hadn't had the strength for both of us like to go separately. And so it's just lifetime after lifetime after lifetime of just not being able to live without her. And like I still feel so emotional about that. But it was that pure sense of the mother energy to me. Like we were together since I was 12 and she protected me like and kept me on the planet. I would have left. I had that pretty intense depression when I was 13, so like, and would have left if I hadn't have had her to like as a responsibility to care for at the time. And I think that actually would have really kept going on in my motherhood in terms of like, I'm only here because of the kids. Do you know what I mean? And that came up a lot in the pregnancy. It came up a lot in my reconciling with the organs of like, am I here living my own life for me, or am I here living my life for my children? And there was obviously a reason why she hung around my horse for such a long time because she, and that was a lot of the stuff that came out in the sessions in the years in those months before she passed was like, she had held on a long time because she was worried about me. And she was worried about what was going to happen after. She was worried about the other horse that didn't have its stuff sorted out because it was my friend's horse who passed away, and her, so she was living this life of service, and she was very stoic in that. But there wasn't much joy and lightness and love and sustenance for her. And she loved, but she loved in her own way. Like, she loved with duty, and she, yeah, like, it wasn't really until she had a couple of goes at passing where she dropped off a whole lot of baggage on the other side, and she came back and she looked like 20 years younger, and she started to like play again, and like obviously her body was old, but she was just like this different horse. And I was like, oh my God. And so yeah, like the two of them from the womb and the other side, it, like, and I needed to let go that like desperate clinging to her in order to be able to have like Amira come through so cleanly, because Amira was like, like, anything's possible, but you can't be attached to it. You know, everything's equal, that you can't want something more than the other thing. You know, every all.
The funny thing is when you came online, like the first thing I thought was like, oh my God, you look so young. And you just said the same thing about your horse, like I feel like you look 10 years younger and
Yeah,
a
wow.
girl, like playful and like I don't know, I like a girly glowiness about you. That was my first thought when the Zoom picture came on. And you're just
Oh.
saying the same thing about your horse.
Yeah. And so, really early on in the pregnancy, Andrea asked me, and she asked me very carefully. She said, "Have you received that you're going to pass away in childbirth?" And I was like, I can't tell you the answer of that. Like, I didn't have that answer. And I knew that it was like a possibility. I knew that it was like there. And I also knew that because of Penny and our history and me, like, I had joked about it with Laura, the lady that was, was working with Penny, with of like, oh, we'll probably just chuff off in the paddock together. Like, we'll all come out one day and they will be just passed out dead together. And I just was so almost flippant. And she said, "And that's why your organs are having a really hard time, because you are so flippant." Like, it, the unatt I had to learn that it wasn't, unattachedness didn't mean carelessness, but I have developed this sense of kind of carelessness for my life, because I was like, I don't, like, I guess it's that other side of it, does, like what Amira is saying, it doesn't really matter. Nothing really matters, but it's all valuable. Like, it's all beautiful. Everything's equal. So, you can't have disregard for something and think that that's being not attached. That's being careless. And that's not loving something. So, Amira was giving me this full-on freaking sermon about stuff. And then, so I had to really go through this honesty thing with my organs about, like, am I going to stay? Because my organs were like, well, why are we going through all of this if you don't really care, one, or you're just going to make us work so hard to, form a whole other being out of creation and then fucking chuck it in the fire anyway? I'd be like, I don't really care. We might die. That my organs were just like, no, you've put us through enough stuff. And so, like, I had to sort of be rattled that much that, and then I was like, well, what do I want to live for? And then I could hear myself saying, oh, well, I'd really like to see, what my kids look like in 10 years, or I'd really like to see, what the face of this child is going to be. And then I could feel Amira going, no, you're not putting that shit on me. No, fucking yuck. You are not blaming me. Like, you are not living for me. I'm going to fuck off too. If you're not like, because I had a bleed really early on in the pregnancy. And it's interesting because when she first, ca like, when their being first came in, I kept getting twins. Are you having twins? A lot of people ask me, are you having twins? Like, twins this, twins that. And I was terrified of twins,
Of twins.
terrified of twins. Yeah. And then I had a reading, and a lot of the stuff that was coming through, the unresolved energy, was from past life stuff of that split soul energy. So kind of like the soul exchange or the walk-in, where, you know, there's two souls born, or one soul split between two bodies, and then one can kind of come in and inhabit. And I think that's also the organ memory of something coming in and not really respecting the physical body as the home, of not really tending to it like its own creation and its own belonging. And being like, this is mine, and I am it, and it is me, and we love each other, and we're not separate from that. Like, and I have this sense of pride and adoration in all of my creations. It was kind of like that split soul energy of like, oh, we'll just come in and use it, and then we'll go out again, you know. So I did this practice, like reconciling that split soul energy, because in the past life memory that was so intense, another part of the soul came into the body and kind of just dishonored it. Anyway, so I did a practice of that, and then the next day I started to bleed, and I was like, oh, this was probably about 8 weeks. I was like, I've lost the baby. And I was so convinced. And I think that was the thing of like being unattached, not getting any clear messages about, oh, this is a girl, or this is a boy, or yes, you definitely are having a pregnancy, or you're definitely not having a pregnancy. And I couldn't really understand in terms of like, there was nothing solid to trust in the sense of like, oh, this feels like last time and I know myself. It was like anything's possible. I don't know. So I was like, well, I'm going to go and get a scan, because I had like a week of bleeding, but I could still feel the presence of this baby like there. And I was like, I just, with the turmoil of Penny and not, and waiting and not knowing if she was going or coming, like, just, I was like, I'm just going to go and get a scan. And then, yeah, there was a baby still there, and I was like, what is going on? But that was another one of Amira's things. One, she loves the sciences. She loves all that technical stuff of like, oh yeah, we could just grow a baby in a test tube or whatever. And I'm like, oh, and she's like, you've got preferences around that, don't you? So, and then yeah, the same thing of like, if you let go of what you know, then you're so much more free for anything to happen.
I that's what really comes through for me. There's such, in what Amira has been saying, the unattachment, but not because you don't care, but because you're not really judging. You're not judging if one is better or worse. There is such freedom and beauty behind that. You know, anything is possible, anything can happen, and neither is good or bad. It's all equally as beautiful and as worthy. There's such
Yes.
freedom, and like, what more is there? That, like, it's just the, I don't know, it's like unconditional love of what is. It's so beautiful. I love it so much.
I get full body chills when you say that, because that is exactly like her transmission. That's exactly her energy. And I felt that like unwaveringness through the pregnancy of like, she didn't, and it's not right to say, it's like, not that she didn't care. She was so unattached to what the outcome was going to be, like whether she made it, whether she didn't make it, whether I made it, whether she didn't make, like, I just felt that like unwavering love of her presence. And like amidst the absolute like wheels falling off everything else and my whole life as I knew it, and everything that I placed my faith and trust outside of myself in kind of just not being there, she was just there watching. And she was watching like this unconditional observer of like, you know, I was an absolute horrific mess. And she'd be like, oh, that's really interesting. Like, you know, just, you know, a horrific car crash. Like, oh, wow. Like, you know, just she was there for all of it. And in this, and that's what really felt so beautiful is that it, I felt for the first time probably so chosen despite my experience of it. I felt like she was there independent, like with me, of how I chose to live my life or how I experienced my choices or whether I like something or not. It was that unwavering. It was like my feelings didn't even matter. She would just love me anyway. And yeah, so I had a, it was like one sort of pivotal thing, like with Sunny. So Sunny was the baby that we had between Iva and Willem. That she's always been with me, like, and I never really appreciated like how, and it actually wasn't until I had a dream way before we conceived Amira where I was giving birth and then all four kids were there. So I was giving birth to the fourth child and I could see Ava and Sunny together and Willem was there and I was just there with Will. And I was like, yeah, I have four children. I've got four children. And it always feels funny to me to say I've got three kids because I have four. Just can't see one in the physical. But I had this craniosacral session. And it was like a 2-hour session. And just at the beginning, the lady that was holding space, she just said, oh, how were your births? And I was like, I spoke to her about Willem's birth. And then when I got to Sunny, I couldn't even speak. Like my body was just racked with grief. And I was like, I could, it just blindsided me how much I was impacted by Sunny's birth. And then it was like, okay, that's there. And then I could talk about Ava's birth. And then a lot of that session was just letting my heart feel that sadness, and I could feel Sunny there, and she could feel Sunny there, and she was like, "Oh, what's Sunny sharing about?" And she's like, "What Sunny's saying about her birth?" And it was so funny because it was like juxtaposition. I was like, "Okay, this is my story around the birth, and it was really harrowing, and it was really horrible, and it was like, you know, traumatic, and this is my body's experience of it." I was asked, she's like, and what's like, tell me about Sunny. And Sunny is like, they're just beaming, like, you know, she's like, I just felt all this gratitude and joy about what her life was like here in her short time. She's like, I was just so happy to come in. I was just so happy to be here. And I asked her, okay, what was the birth like for you? She was like, oh, that was a weird day. And that was all she had to say about it. Like, that was a weird day. And then she took me right back through that birth. We went through that birth. And then she took me over to Penny. And then she took me all the way back through Penny's timeline. And she showed me her as a foal and her being born as a foal and her life and her innocence. And I saw the day that she was born. And she said to me, like, because we were talking about her birth, and she was like, yeah, my birth was a weird day. And when Penny dies, that's going to be a weird day too. And so I realized, oh, I've got this huge, big story about what, like, the imprint of Sunny's birth was for me. And Sunny was like, it was weird. That was the weirdest thing ever. Like, you know, so she's gone back. She's told all her planet about what it was like to come to Earth. She's like, oh, it's pretty cool. It's really fun. It's so good. And then when you're born, it's weird. And then it's fine again. You know, like, it wasn't this whole, like, she didn't have the same story that I had. And it was like almost like her joy in it was just able to completely let me kind of realize, oh, that's my attachment to the birth. And I don't have this sense of like ownership over the birth imprint of someone else. And then Like they get to write that, no matter how old they are. And so sure enough, yeah, Penny's death was the weirdest day. It was horrible and it was beautiful and it was heart-wrenching and it was hilarious in moments. Like, she chose it so that there was no going back, and she chose it so that it was just me and her. And then, yeah, she chose it so that like I had to go through the whole physical process and there was no numbing out or getting someone else to do it. And in that, I really, yeah, I just, it was such a gift, even though it was horrible. It was like so beautiful. And it really made me think, oh, I can do this, in terms of living my life. Like, if I could sort that out, if I could sort out her going, and knowing that I could sort that out, and knowing that I could be okay, then I could sort out my life. I could sort out wanting to be here myself. And then so then it was like, oh, I thought that with that happening, it would just be like a smooth run to the birth. But no. Then it was like, okay, now you get to complete all of these other things. So, with Will and, his heart attack, and then yeah, there was stuff with ownership, with the other horse and his near-death stuff, which was sorting out, all of the emotions left undone about my friend passing. And yeah, then I hadn't really, I'd just been trusting that the birth was just going to go how it was going to go. Didn't know if I was going to live through it or not. But after Penny had gone, I was like, oh, I kind of get to live my life for me now. And watching her get younger and younger, going like, and what it took of her to let go her preferences. Like, she'd always held herself as this very stoic, very like hard exterior, never let anything in, never let anything touch her, like tough as nails, horse, toughest horse in the whole world. And then she just started to like let that go a little bit. And I was like, oh, God, if she can do that, like, I don't have to have this whole thing of, I could just completely change my life. What could I do? What could I choose? Even if it was like my worst nightmare in the first place, and then that's when it was like, oh, so I really want to live for me. I really want to live and see like what, the person I turn into if I choose things that I didn't even think I wanted. If I chose my worst nightmare, like what sort of person would I come out of that? Like, I don't even know who I am anymore. And that was like probably the first time I've said that and felt like it being a freeing thing of like, oh, I don't know what I'm gonna do. I don't know. And then as I sort of started to choose that and move towards that, because I'd been in that sense of like just depletion and service and outward sort of tending to other things, I was just getting more and more tired. And Will was away in Kalgoorlie, and I was home with the kids, and I had this experience one night of like, I'd been getting heart palpitations, and I've been seeing like the osteo. I had been doing a whole lot of other stuff with acupuncture and Chinese medicine, and yeah, I thought it was electrolyte related. I thought it was stress related, all of these things. And I had chosen to go get some iron studies done, and probably about 20 weeks. And I wasn't that low then, so I was like, oh, whatever. And then I had this experience that I had the most horrendous chest pain, and I thought I was dying. Like, it woke me up. I could barely breathe. And I got through that experience knowing that I wanted to be here. Like I was, no, I'm going to choose myself. And then it was like, okay, how long do I have to get to the hospital so that I can choose myself no matter what? How, like, who do I call for the kids? Do I call an ambulance first? Or like, and I was at that point of like, I don't care what it takes. I want to leave now, which I had never in my whole life got to that point. Like, I sort of swung, like, I don't really care if I go. I was like, no, I don't care what interventions I'm going to go all the way in now. And yeah, so I was thinking like, oh, how long is the baby going to survive if I cack it? And it was this thing of like, she was not worried about it at all. Like, she was just like, you choose you. Whereas like the week prior to Penny passing, I love Pen for this. She always had this way of putting me through these like initiations. And we'd just been to a funeral of someone else, like our good friend's mum. And we'd been talking a lot about death that day. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna take the horses out the paddock and I'm just gonna go and graze them and have a soft moment or whatever. And at that moment, she decided to try and tear the other horse's face off and zipped. He just took off and like burnt my hand with the rope, like took all the skin off my
Oh,
hand.
wow.
Yeah. And it was the most painful thing, the most painful thing ever. And I was like, just excruciating pain. And I was like, what was that for? And she's like, you could have stopped me. You didn't stop me or whatever. Like, you know, but that moment where I was like, if I hadn't have been pregnant, I would have just been like, get me out of here. Because the burning sensation, you can't get away from it. And Will was like, do you want me to take you to the hospital? I was like, what are they going to be able to do? Like, they're not going to be able to give me any pain medication that's safe for pregnancy. And I could feel myself getting hysterical trying to escape just that intense searing pain of having no skin over my whole hand. And then I could feel what was a mirror then starting to freak out. And it was the only time in the pregnancy where I was like, if it wasn't for you, I would be out of here. And then she was like, really distressed. And I was like, shit, I need to get myself together. So I went and got some ice and like for 6 hours just had my hand in the ice until the pain was so bad from the ice. And then I would take it out until the pain was so bad from the burn. And then I'd put it back. And I sort of just like hallucinated in this trance for like 6 hours, but got into that beautiful, blissful place where you're like, you know that it's not going to kill you, but you'll get to one threshold. You go to the other side, you get to that threshold, and then you'll like, and I was so grateful for that last little lesson that she gave me because it just prepared me for the birth of like, yeah, you can get hysterical and then the baby's going to freak out, or you can just move towards the pain, the sensation and meet the sensation and then just go into it. Yeah. So yeah, in that experience when I thought I was dying, I had all of those things of like, okay, so if I die, how long will it be until someone finds the bigger kids? Like, how long will it be until, how long can a baby survive in its mother? Like, if I have to choose between having open heart surgery or the baby surviving, and it was just that I choose me above all else. I choose me, like, if I had to go and get in the ambulance then and go, and the baby didn't make it, and someone would call the kids from, I could just tell the paramedic, yeah, I've got kids in the house, can you organize something? I was okay about choosing myself over my kids, where I never had that before. I never ever got to that place before. And I just remember at the end of it when the pain in my heart stopped and I sort of got through the intensity of it and I realized, okay, I'm not dead. Like just this sense of love, like, oh, I've actually made it. I've actually made it and I want to be here. And then, yeah, I still felt terrible and awful for like the whole next day. And it was actually the day that there was like a solar eclipse. So it was really eerie and half light and it just felt like an apocalypse. And I called Zamara, my teacher, and I was like, I don't know what's going on. And then, yeah, she was like, have you been to the doctor? And I was like, oh, look, I haven't been to the doctor for ages or whatever. And I was like, I feel like my organs, like if I, now that I want to make it, I need to go and find out if my organs need help. And then I did, and I was like, oh, they're going to be really funny about this. And I, because I, all I could find to get into that day, because I was at like 36, 37 weeks by then, like a GP obstetrician, because I was like, I want to know right then and there. And he was really cool about the whole thing. Like he was a bit miffed as to, he's like, so who's been looking after you? And I was like, oh, I've been looking after myself. And he was like, okay, righto. And because I had been doing my own, like, because I'd had the history with like PE with Willem, and I'd been doing my own urine, I'd been doing my own blood sugar and stuff, because that had been something that had come up with my pancreas from my grandmother who had it. So it was a like a lineage related thing that I'd resolved, and I just wanted to check. And he was like, okay, well, let's just run some bloods. And he's like, what's your plan? And I was just like, he's like, do you want me to book you into the hospital? And I was like, oh, well, we'll just see what the bloods come back as. And yeah. And he's like, he was just totally miffed. He's like, look, everything looks great. Like, because he, yeah, he's like, yeah, he was just completely shocked as that I was a woman who had no care. But I'd been looking after myself. But he, yeah, he's like, well, the blood's come back and your iron's just nothing. So that's why you've been having heart palpitations, and that's why you've been having all of these things. He said, like, your hemoglobin's okay. So yeah, and then he was like, what do you want to do about your iron? And that was like a whole other thing of like, normally I would try and get it up with all these things. But Amira was like, at that stage, she was like, get an infusion. I was like, I don't want to get an infusion. And I was so worried that the infusion would push my liver over the edge and that I would end up having liver failure. I was worried that I was already too far gone, that it would just overwhelm my system. But at the same time, I was like, I don't have enough energy to give birth. So if I don't get the infusion, then I know that I'm probably not going to have the energy to choose in birth. The birth will just, and I had this really big awakening in the acupuncture session where, because I also had, I think my biggest kind of things that were coming up in the pregnancy were bleeding out, and around my placenta, of not being able to release the placenta, and that being associated with the blood. And there was this one point that she did, which is actually the river of, I think it's the river of blood, or that's what it translates to, or the river of life. And I realized that because I didn't have enough iron in my system, and we obviously have huge amounts of iron in the earth where we live, and I had allowed myself to get so like depleted, focusing on this like outward service of everyone else's stuff and everyone else's life force and managing that, that in order to then bridge myself or plug myself back in, ionically, I would have to transfer that blood to the earth to become that ionic bridge that I travel on to put my life force into the earth and stay. But I didn't have the result. So it almost felt like this, very innate but simplified way that the only way the body could return itself or be one with the earth would be to bleed out on the earth. And then once I realized that, I was like, oh, that's why I need this infusion to be this other river, so I don't have to bleed out. Like that doesn't have to, I can then have the blood with the iron and all the elemental forms going around in my blood force down to my legs. I don't have to pass out to make contact with the earth, truly. So there were so many realizations in that of like, okay, now I'm going to have to go and do the things that I don't want to do. It's part of my choice because that, it's my preferences now being dissolved for what I want. And the same sort of thing of like, I was like, well, maybe with that dream with the cesarean or with me pulling the baby, I was like, maybe I'm supposed to have this baby via cesarean. And that's why I had to go to the obstetrician and be like, hey, look, if you can, maybe like, because they're so technical, they're so advanced that like they needed to have that experience of coming in of a surgical birth. Yes, my love.
I'm thirsty.
Oh, do you want me to get you a drink?
Yeah.
Oh, 2 seconds. Do you want to say hi to Antonia?
No,
Yeah,
I
it's that whole thing of like, would I choose the surgery? No. Yeah, with that experience where I thought I was dying, I was like, yeah, absolutely, I'll have open heart transplant if I need to.
Yeah.
Whereas previously I would have judged that for myself. Yeah, and then just kind of realizing, oh no, it was just that kind of key element of, just having the transfusion and, letting that kind of go through and replenish me of choosing the unknown thing. And I spoke to the obstetrician in length and I was like, look, I'm really worried about this. I did lots of stuff. And I was like, can I just have a half infusion or just a little bit just to top me up, but not overwhelm me? And he was like, I was expecting a huge, big fight with him. He was like, of course. He's like, would you be happy to donate the other part of the infusion to an international student because they don't get Medicare and that would be the greatest gift for them? And it just ended up being this whole thing of like, oh, yeah, my worst nightmare was actually like one of the most supportive things. And then, yeah, he was just like, oh, so what's your plans for the birth? And I was like, oh, look, I've spoken to a couple of midwives, which I had done way earlier in the pregnancy because I wasn't sure if that's what I wanted. And he knew the midwife that I'd spoken to. He used to work with her. And I was like, that's all I said. I said I'd spoken to her. And he was like, oh, I know her. Let me know how you go with her, if she's still available or whatnot. If you don't have someone and you want someone, then call me back. And I ended up calling Abby because whilst I didn't think I needed anyone for the birth, I was like, afterwards with the placenta, I want someone there. And I spoke to Kirsten like the whole way through, obviously, but in length, because I'd never had that uninterfered with, uninterrupted birth of the placenta, which was the birth of me, in even with the home births. But even with Ava, I didn't, it was almost like that part of my experience of birthing myself and reconnecting back to the earth was like completely abstract. I was like, I don't even know if I could do that because I hadn't done it without Cinto. And yeah, so I spoke to Abby and she was just like, yeah, cool. Like, call me if you want me. Call me if you don't, or whatever. And it was so many synchronicities with her. She looks so much like my actual sister. And so many synchronicities with the horses, because she had horses. And, I told her all my fears from thinking this baby's going to come out looking like a praying mantis. And she was just so cool about it. And it was one of those things I said to her, I was like, I feel like the greatest gift is that, not that you don't care, but you're so unattached to what I do. Yeah, so I felt like I was actually, in terms of like having a free birth, I was then free to birth because I've realized when I had that my version of the heart attack, I was like, I'm not even free to die. I'm not even free to go and to the hospital and save myself because I haven't set up support to choose myself, choose any
Mm-hmm.
option. So when I went and I was like, well, I could choose an obstetrician, I could choose to go get a cesarean, I could choose to have a midwife, I could choose to, birth with the horses in the paddock. I could choose that because I had gone down each that actually were available.
Yeah.
Whereas before, I didn't feel very free. I felt really, really stuck with my only option being to bleed out, to return myself, because I was literally stuck on a, internal ionic level. So yeah, that depletion and that limitedness of my own energy was only pointing to that being the option. And it was like I couldn't even open that up until I faced each possible thing that I would have thought was my worst nightmare. And it actually felt really good. I couldn't believe how nice it was meeting with an obstetrician at 36, 30, well, 37 weeks, 38 weeks, having had no, prenatal care, and him being like, what do you think you might do? Oh, I know that midwife. She's lovely. Please don't tell her I gave you a hard time because she's going to kill me. And I just felt like even now I would feel like I want to go back and show him my baby and be like, look at a mirror. It was her all along kind of thing. And yeah, because it was just, I guess, that right timing of moving towards a thing that's uncomfortable. Well, like the thing with the burn on the hand, it was like it's the right time of moving towards the discomfort. So yeah, the birth was very much like that. It was once that I'd had the iron infusion, I felt like freaking $1 million. And then I was just kind of like in the joy of like waiting. And then I got to this point where I didn't know what dates or anything I was, because my cycle had been so irregular beforehand, because it was syncing with pennies to then conceive on the same day. That yeah, even talking to Abby, like I honestly couldn't figure out. I knew exactly when I'd conceived, but I didn't know whether, like, because of the cycle length, if I was 43 weeks or just gone 41 or whatever. So yeah, I had got to that stage of like feeling like she had been wait or Amira had been waiting for me that whole time to be ready. And then after I got that infusion, it was like, okay, we'll calibrate ourselves and all of that energy can now resource. And I had this experience with Andrew while we're having osteo about the placenta being this like almost gatekeeper between my body and her. And I felt this whole time like there was this separateness, like she was her own separate experience, and then I was having this separate experience around her. And I'd had those worries about the placenta and about my liver and about pee and all these things come up. And there was this thing about that nourishment and about that blood and that life force. And after the infusion and then connecting actually with the blueprint or the highest possibility of that placenta, and I realized, oh, the placenta's not just grown for the baby, but it's grown for me as well. And the placental field just then went around me and then around the room and then around the house and then around. And like Andrea was just like, oh my God, I've never experienced that before. And I realized, like, oh, the placenta's like actually holding, like, for as much possibility as what Amira's presence is, of like anything's possible, like the placenta held that same energy of like, well, I don't have a preference. I'll hold nourish this. I'll hold nourish around you. Like, and the placental field just became this huge, huge, big thing. And it completely changed my relationship with the placenta of how it was going to be birthing it, that I was actually going to be birthed out of the placenta, not the placenta
Not the
birthing
other
out of
way
me.
around,
And I was like, oh my God, I would never have got that if I hadn't have had the infusion, like all of those things. And then so in those kind of last weeks, it was like, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready to choose. And we'd been having like acupuncture, but had never ever been with the intention of, and I'm terrified of needles, right? Terrified of
Yeah.
needles. Like unmedicated birth, no issue. Getting an epidural, most terrified. Like that would be my worst nightmare. And so when Amira was like, I felt the baby was like, you need to go and get acupuncture in this pregnancy. I was like, oh. But that's the same thing, like turning towards my worst nightmare. And it was the most beautiful thing to have because it was that real fine element energy. And I could see it was like, oh, that was the thing, like trying to, like a metal, trying to connect really subtly these rivers and these places in my body, you know? And then, yeah, my worst nightmare became the woman that I had, like, her middle name's Maeve, and Mira's middle name is actually Maeve because it's like that same sort of thing of she just popped out of nowhere, and I was telling her all these crazy things and crying to her about my horse dying, and you know, all of these, like she just got all of it, like you know, same, it's just this weird thing. And then I said to her in that last acupuncture session, I'm ready, like I'm choosing now to have the baby. I'm choosing to let her know that it's time now. And then, so I had that acupuncture, and it was like getting struck with a lightning bolt, and I could feel my womb. And then I was like, oh my God. But it was like, I'm actually choosing me to complete the pregnancy now. And I'm signaling I'm ready to go because I knew also that this is going to be my last baby. So it was like, and this is the beginning of the end and the beginning of the end. And if I hadn't have done that with Penny dying, of saying, I'm ready to complete your life now, I'm ready to complete us being enmeshed together, I'm ready to now separate, I'm ready to now begin the untangling process, I wouldn't have had that with, I wouldn't have been able to see the beauty in something no longer continuing and it finishing. So yeah, and then my waters went like about 3 o'clock that morning. Yeah, so same birth pattern, even with the induction of my waters opening and then labor not starting. And it was the same thing of like I had a lot of mech in my waters, like big mech. And I was like, it either means nothing or it means something. But it was that thing of like I was really nervous to say even to Kirsten that I'd begun labor because then it was like, oh, now I've started it kind of thing. But I had to message her and just say, oh, my waters have gone and there's mech there. And she was like, how do you feel about it? I'm like, a little bit nervous, but I'm fine. And then I was like, I can't talk about it anymore because I don't want to have to be attached to this thing. And I can't think about it. And I had received a couple of channels. Sounds so weird. The 2 or 3 days beforehand, and I hadn't channeled through the whole pregnancy. It was something that just kind of shut off of just being in it, going through the thing and not like receiving, just having the human experience of it. And it wasn't until those last like 3 days beforehand where I received this thing of my mind just being present, of not having to separate the mind or not having to go into a meditation or and bringing the mind in every time. And if the mind has a thought, that the thought is welcome, that like you know, like a kid saying, what if this happens? And it's like, yeah, what if it happens? It's okay, you're welcome here. So letting yourself be really present with the fearful thing, or letting yourself be really present with the thought, but then reassuring the thought that it doesn't mean anything, it doesn't matter, it might not be that, like. And if it is, we don't have a preference about that. Like, that's still a valuable thing. So it was like every thought, rather than trying to push it away, was a valuable thought. So in that process, the mind was actually able to come along. Like, the mind didn't have to leave in order for labor to begin. And I really had this tearing moment of like, because I'd in both of the labors had gone to see Penny and gone to see her in labor to reassure me. I was like, do I go and drive down? Because I'd moved Moby down to an adjustment place. Do I go and drive down to see him? What is open, heavy mech? And I just text Abby and said, my waters are open. And she's like, No worries. Is there any staying? I was like, yeah, a bit of staying. She's like, no worries. Go pop down, see your horse, and I'll send you a message in 24 hours or whatever. And I was just like, okay. And then I just like shut that off. And then I laid there and I listened to my own voice. Like I replayed the channels from my own being. It sounds like the most ridiculous thing, but I had to listen to the channel that I'd received again and again. And then it was like I either choose to give birth, like I choose to go towards the thing, I choose my worst nightmare, or I choose to go and do something else. And the baby was like, fine. She's like, it is just a choice. And I had this weird thing of like, you have till 3 o'clock for this choice, or you have, or then it becomes a different choice.
Something
And then,
else, yeah.
yeah, and then you go, it'll be just a different choice. And both of them are fine. Both of them are fine. So I was like, okay. And then it was like, I must have had hindwaters, but I had a whole nother huge big gush. And it was just like, okay. And then I was like laying down and the contractions started. And I was like, I was just like saying thank you for everyone. I'm like, yeah, I'm choosing this. I'm choosing to have birth. I'm like, same sort of thing. I'm choosing to give birth now. I'm choosing this contraction. And they're like, and then there's this voice like, well, you can choose to lay down or you can choose to stand up. And I'm like, oh God, it's so painful to stand up. But I chose to stand up. And it's like, okay, you can choose to stand up. Or you can choose now to bounce on the fit ball. And I was like, oh God, bouncing on the fit ball is so uncomfortable. It's like, okay, well, you can choose now to bounce on the fit ball, or you can choose to lunge. And I was like, oh, fucking hell, it's so painful to lunge. But it's like every time it was like, okay, I'm going to choose the most painful thing. I'm going to choose the uncomfortable thing. Because if you just keep going back and forth between the choice, then you don't get that choice anymore. Like the time, I don't know what, and I kept thinking I was making it up. I kept thinking I was making up the time, but I just kept going towards the most uncomfortable thing. And it was only me and Will there, and the kids were sort of like pottering around. And then I said, can you go? Like, and Ava really wanted Will to be with her. And, I was like, I need you to be with me because by that stage I was sweating and working hard. And so I think mum came picked up the kids. And then it was really funny just because it was just me and him. It was almost like I could let myself just utter the words of how much I was not enjoying what I'd chosen. I was like, and I just remember saying, I really don't like this. And it was so freeing to be like, and I choose it anyway. Like, I'm choosing this and I don't have to like it, but I like that I get a choice. Like, and there was part of me that just only I know what it was for me to make those choices. And that's the satisfaction I got to have of like, and I chose the shit thing. And the shit thing was satisfying in the end, but it was really shit at the time. And I just remember saying, like, ah, oh, can't wait for this to be over. And so it was actually quite a very quick birth once I got into it, about an hour and a half. Yeah. And I said to Will, you can call Kirsten to come because I wanted her there immediately after. And she got there and I'd just made it to the shower. And then I think she said, I could hear you from outside, and I knew that it was really close, but Will didn't know how close it was. And I think she got there, and then she said to Will, you better get ready to catch because her head was coming out. And this is the thing, I still, this, because my mind was there the whole way, and my mind was like knowing that I'm choosing the thing, and then my mind was also saying, I don't like this. And I'm like, I know this is crap, we're moving towards it anyway. I still can feel and remember everything of her head coming out and the feeling of her head coming out and all of those things. Like I just felt it's probably the most present I've been in anything. And then, yeah, and then she was there. And then it was like I immediately had the moment of now I'm choosing myself. Like that work of birthing something is done. And
mm-hmm.
and yeah, birthing my placenta was really hard. It was probably more painful than anything. And Abby came probably about 40 minutes after she was born.
Mm-hmm.
So what I thought was attributed to the Cinto that they give you, like the shakes and that adrenaline and that like rectally feeling, that's just me.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Yeah.
Thinking, am I in or am I out kind of thing. Yeah, but like almost a bit of shock, like not, you know. And I remember saying to Kirsten, like, I really want to be here. I'm choosing to be here now. Like, I really want to be here. And I don't think there was that much blood, but it was like I had to really, I was like, I'm ready to birth the placenta now. And I had to push it out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and even Abby got there and Amira must have been beside me. And she was said it was funny because it was the longest umbilical cord she's ever seen in her life. So she was able to be to the side. And I think Kirsten was holding me and I was talking to her in, like, you know, light language, and I was pushing my feet onto Abby's shoulders. And I was like, oh, that's why I needed that support,
mm-hmm.
like not to birth her but to birth
mm-hmm.
myself, like mm-hmm. because that placenta marked the end
mm-hmm.
of the pregnancy.
Yeah.
And all the way through, every time I reconciled the stuff with my organs, I was like, this is the last time we're going to choose to bring another life force through above our own. I was like, you know, there's not going to be another pregnancy after this. And so when people still ask me now, like, are you going to have another baby? I'm like, I've made promises to my body that I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Not through this body. Up. So, yeah. And that just began, like, so after she was born, and she was born at, like, 10 past three, as soon as she came out, she had another big shit. And then in, like, the first 24 hours, so between that time of the waters breaking and when Abby would have just been like, oh yeah, her waters have been open, she did so in her first like 24 hours from that, after she was out, she did another four big poos. Like,
even that feels so like earthy to me, you know. Everything is about being connected to the earth.
Yeah. And like building that bridge of my body to your body, my body to your body. But what I also realized is that, yeah, if I had just chosen to wander down, you know, and see the horses,
mm-hmm.
if I just kind of chosen to just like let the contractions wash over me rather than mm-hmm. moving mm-hmm. into it, moving towards it, like getting each contraction and putting it on for size and pushing it through, then, yeah, like I would have been full of meconium.
Yeah.
Full of it.
Yeah.
Like my whole room. And then it would have just been a different outcome.
Yeah.
Like, because I remember Abby saying when she saw the pad, she was like, that's not mech stain, that's pure mech. I was like, yeah, I know. But it didn't mean anything, right?
Mm.
It could have been something, but it didn't mean anything. It didn't matter.
And you didn't attach anything to it, you know, like. There was no, it's just what it was, and there was no judgment of what it is. It was just there, which is.
It was there.
It was
there.
There
was a lot of it there.
And yeah, and I feel like that's like a mirror as well, you know, like it is. And we don't need to judge it. We don't need to make anything of it. It's just there. And we still have a choice about what it is and what it might become.
Yeah, and what meaning we make of it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And her introduction to life, like, has been shit. And there was times of that postpartum where it was just so shit. It was, and then it was became this like ode to shit. And the and you know, it was like this, and it's meconium and it doesn't mean anything. And then it was almost like now we can just rest in it. Rest in it being is. This is what it is, and it doesn't mean anything. And then it was freeing. It was freeing then to be, yeah, we're not trying to avoid life being really, really rubbish right now. And then we're not using those precious resources thinking that it's meant to be any different. And then that took me on like a whole nother level of just excavating ancestral stuff and stuff with my body, and then just open me up into everything else that is available in that moment, like the telepathy with the horses and what has opened, like what is now also there with the shit. And it was a question that I remember you saying, like after the birth of Freya, and just being like, I can do whatever the fuck I want. I just felt like it can be shit, and I still know that I chose it anyway. And it was this satisfaction of like, I don't even have to like it, but I got to choose it. Like, and I feel like that's what Amira has really gifted me of like, it's not whether you like it, it's you're here. Like that's you're here doing it. Like you're here with the shit. Like the shit's just good, you know? And then, you know, all of this stuff of like the overwhelming sense of noise and the overwhelming sense of like tiredness and everything. It's like, oh, all those frayed ends are now like opening me up to receive stuff. And then the sensitivity of her digestive system. Like I never thought that I would go through a process of healing my stomach. I never actually thought I had digestive problems. But because I've had to go through the process of realizing how sensitive and finely tuned we are, now we can make choices with that information. So we ended up getting a hair sample analysis done of, what we can and can't eat. And then it was like, oh, this is stuff that I've not really been aware of my whole lifetime. Or my mum and me never got to go down this route because it was never shit enough. You know, it was never that bad that we did anything. We made a decision. We're going to do this. So we're going to move towards how uncomfortable it is. So, like that's what was really liberating about the whole thing. I was like, I don't have to avoid the crap anymore. Like the crap is just part of the process. And that's how you know that you're creating something. It's the same thing with the horses. Like there's just shit piling up every day out there because there's horses there. It's just an indication of the process of creation. And it doesn't mean anything, but at the same time, it's this gateway to go into of like, what's your fear about it? Like, what's your issue with it? Why haven't you created space for it? Like, why does it need to be anything different? Why are you making it wrong that it's there? Like, so it's been a whole other journey of choosing something and then not continually judging it or continually interfering or being disappointed by it or thinking it should be any other way. Like, you know, people ask me, like, what is it like to not eat all these things? And I was just like, well, I've really let go of my attachment to food. And I feel like I know how to like look after myself now, you know? And then because that's now running how it's meant to for me. Now that part of my world or my human experience is compatible for me. It's like, oh, I feel like I belong here. I'm not having this reaction to the simple processes of eating, drinking, pooing, sleeping, all of those things that you have to go back through what an infant learns. So as you know, Amira's been doing her how to be a human 101, I've been like, oh, how to be a human 101. Like, so, but yeah, and it's been hard. Like, and that I think that's the gift of like what Sunny shared with her birth imprint is like, just because a birth imprint's really challenging doesn't mean it doesn't hold the most value for you. It'll be like the richest thing. Like, you know, the shit is the fertile thing that grows the seeds from the land. That's the big compost. That's that black gold, you know. So like it can be the best thing, but it's still horrendous, you know.
I love
So it's nice to be a little bit more on the other side of it, or at least feel like you're at some sort of out point now rather than just going through the shit of it, because it's very, very hard for other people to be present with you. And that was a I found so isolating. But at the same time, with Penny and her passing, not many people could understand that. They couldn't understand, the grief, the heart. So it kind of whittled away the people that could also stand in that not knowing, in the not knowing and in the horrendousness and in the, not really being within your control. You don't get to choose the timing of something. You don't, you only kind of, just meet it as it's there. But that aloneness also gave me this intimacy and this privacy that I probably wouldn't have chosen to be able to hear myself or to face the fear of being alone or face the thing of, so like, it's nice now to be able to talk about it and have the refinement of that period kind of see the surface of it, rather than just being the abrasion force of change. But she is an absolute force. Like, I definitely, it's always been this way of equality with her. Like, everything is equal. I'm just as equal with her. She's equal with me. Like, it's quite a different contract and relationship I have with her compared to Willem and Ava, which she's definitely lived off of that in a really strong way, and I'm being guided by
that's beautiful. Thank you. There's such a sense of like, I don't know, calmness and contentment with what is or what has been. I don't know. I just like that. Now that you've kind of come to the end of that story, I feel like there's so much, contentment in a way, and not an acceptance, maybe acceptance and.
I feel in so many ways like it's been the lesson that I needed in my whole lifetime of not having to like try and create things or even try and live my life the way I want to live it or be analyzing, is this meant to be happening? You know, so I'm so free now, like literally shit will just happen and that's meant to be happening, you know, like I don't have to be out there living my life, creating my life consciously, you know, choosing things like or bringing things closer to me or further. Or, like it just is now. Like everything that is meant to be is already happening.
Yeah.
Like
sometimes I feel like
I don't have to control my life anymore.
Yeah. And I think rebirth does that in a way, and I feel like maybe there is a bigger essence to it being called free birth. It's not just you're being free of medical personnel, you know, like that kind of definition. It's also a sense of what it does. Like it really has a sense of freedom, and it frees you. Like I can relate to that to so much, because there is such utter sense of freedom, not just while you're in it, but what comes after and what you're going to do. Like there is just no limits to that freedom that you can feel and that you can be. There's so much more to it than, you know, other than just choosing not to have a midwife or not to have an obstetrician or not being in a hospital. It's a beautiful gift that free birth can give you in a way, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I had to really, I've wondered a lot, like, what does it mean? Well, I mean, I know that means different things for different people, but when I realized, like, if I'm not even free to die.
Yes. What? Yeah.
Then, what, you know, how am I actually living my life? Like, if I'm not, so what feels free for me is that everything is available and in that moment I get to choose, but I don't know what I'm going to choose until that moment. Like the moment has to meet me and then I am there in it as a part of it, creating with it, but I don't, it's not like I'm I'm working towards something. Like
No.
it's almost a relief of not having to control my life anymore, because you realize that in birth, when it's not managed by anything, that you are not in control.
Yeah. And like, not even like you are managing it.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. I'm not managing. That's something that's not being I'm not managing my experience.
Yeah.
And I think how many people, it's probably I didn't even realize it until I had that birth, until I had that pregnancy, of just stepping back from trying to manage my own life, trying to manage my emotions, trying to manage my thoughts. And I was just like, well, the thoughts can just be there and it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Or it does mean something. Like, you know, it's so funny because Amir is a Gemini and, you know, like that, depending on like if you play that down one end of the piano, like nothing means anything, then it feels quite morbid. But then if you play nothing means anything at the top, it's like that ability to flip between, it just depends on the tone. Like it's still the same, nothing means anything, but it just depends on what end of the spectrum or where you want to play it at any given time. Like, you know,
that's interesting that she chose to be a Gemini, and we were just speaking about twins and your fear of twins and possibly losing a twin, and then boom, she like that's she chooses that.
Because I feel like that is the whole essence. Even before she came into conception, like she or like the energy always came through as more than one. Like she was always more than one, and in the same way that represents both, like twins is both separation and it's also equality and reflection. So she has that in her wholeness as well, like you know, you can't have things in separation in the same thing, and it does, you can have multiple meanings and it does, and they all have value. You can have conflicting things that have equal value. Like you don't have to have everything agreeing to have wholeness and to have value and worth. And I think she just does that beautifully. And it's so interesting, like she had quite a hard time with her digestive system, especially in the early days. And you know, we did a lot of osteopathic work and craniosacral work of just how much of that was mirrored in me and her and the lineage and all of these things. And it's like it's a valuable creation, and then you can, as much as you want to play with it, you can also easily let it go. Like I didn't actually quite realize, because she had a curvature in her spine, and I just thought it was like, oh, she's, I'm looking at it going, oh, she just has a preference for going that way. And then it wasn't until Andrea used the words today, like, I've always wondered if you get scoliosis at the right time, that you can actually change the way that it expresses.
Yeah.
And I didn't even think when I looked at her early on, oh, she's got scoliosis. Like, but I was like, oh, yeah, actually that's what it was. And now she doesn't have scoliosis anymore. Like, but I just looked at it and said, well, she's got a preference for the spine going that way, because that's the way that she was in my womb. Hold on, basically planet Earth, she's here now.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that with me and with
the whole cafe.
With the
I'm right, and look, I'm right, we're right outside the toilet there, so everyone can go drop their shit off.
Dir hat diese Folge gefallen? Dann teile gerne diese Folge und bewerte den Podcast auf Spotify oder iTunes, damit noch viel mehr Frauen der Medizin von Geburtsgeschichten lauschen können. Wenn du noch mehr über mich und meine Arbeit erfahren willst, dann findest du mich auf meiner Website www.antoniaunger.com oder über Instagram auf @the_antonia_unger. Schreib mir gerne eine Nachricht, schreib mir gerne eine E-Mail. Meine Ohren und mein Postfach ist immer offen für dich. Ich freue mich auf dich.